I really liked it. And there's several more. I'll include them as the weeks go on, but I found some pretty good ones out there that people had put together. So yeah, I like that one. I thought it was pretty funny. All right, so carrying on with our study of the scheme of redemption and moving on through, I think everybody here is pretty familiar with what we're talking about, but just on a high level, we're just looking at the whole story of the Bible. And it is one story. It's not a bunch of different stories all compiled into one book. It is indeed one book, and it flows quite well from cover to cover. But obviously it takes a good bit of studying to fully get a good grip on what's going on and to really wrap our minds around it. And so that's kind of the hope of class, is for us to... On mute. There we go. Is that better? All right. So yeah, so just growing up in the church, I did not spend a whole lot of time in the Old Testament. You know, a lot of the classes I had as a kid and stuff like that, they just didn't spend a whole lot of time in the Old Testament, except for, you know, just the big stories. You know, I could tell about David and Goliath and so on and so forth. But, you know, as far as being able to connect the old stuff with what we saw in the New Testament, well, that was a whole different ball game. And admittedly, that would, as a child and even as a teenager, that may have been a bit over my head. You know, I really didn't start getting into a deep study of the Old Testament and connecting all those dots and well into my 20s. And it I don't know, it's like this light bulb came on. Oh yeah, I mean, I'd always understood Jesus, and I had always understood the power of the cross. I mean, that made sense to me. I got it. But when you start tying it all back to the promises of made to Abraham, and then you move all the way through into Israel, and then you move into the idea of the priesthood and what that means. You move into the idea of the tabernacle and the temple, that holy place where God is, and the whole idea of the veil, that separation of God and man because of sin. You know, you learn about all this stuff in the Old Testament. And there is a tremendous connection there to the cross. And Hebrews spends a lot of time, the writer of Hebrews spends a lot of time making that connection. But it doesn't make a whole lot of sense if we don't really know what all happened back in the Old Testament. And so, we're going to spend a good bit of time here just learning this stuff because it helps make our understanding of our world on this side of the cross so much more clearer. You know, when we see the idea of the tabernacle and that, you know, that was the place where God was. That's the place where man came to meet with God. But only certain people could do it. Only certain people could go there, and that, you know, everybody else kind of had to filter through those priests as mediators. And of course, there's only one priest who could actually go into the very presence of God, and he could only do that once a year. And even he himself had to go through this massive ritual of cleansing just to go in there for one day. And so, you know, we see all that, but then we look at us on this side of the cross, and we see Jesus as the high priest who is in the very presence of God, not some copy of the presence, You know, not some man-made thing that's sitting down here on earth with some presence of God, but Jesus is there, literally, in heaven, in the real temple, in the real, very presence of God, interceding for us, making atonement for us all the time. And we are priests. Whoa. That's a big deal. You know, back under the old system, people could only access God through the priest. We are priests. The Bible tells us that. The Bible tells us that Christians are priests. And we have access to God. When Jesus died on the cross, that veil of the temple was torn in half, thus opening anybody now could have access to God who would come to him. And, I mean, that changes everything. You talk about a game changer. That's huge, folks. But none of that really makes sense. You know what I mean? As a kid, as a teenager, oh, man, I heard the story about, and the veil of the temple was rent in two. Man, I heard that read 1,000 times, but it never really made sense. Okay, great. What does that mean? But when you go back and study all this, oh, I get it now. And then you start reading things like, you are the temple of God. Well, that means God dwells in me. That's absolutely right. That's what it means. Whoa. It changes everything. And suddenly this idea of holiness takes on a whole new meaning and a whole new level. You know, growing up, it was like, well, you got to do this to be saved. You got to do this to be saved. You got to do this. Well, okay, that's great. But now I'm at a place in my life where I'm doing this because I am holy. I am a holy temple. This is where the Spirit of God dwells, right here. This thing is not, this temple is not to be abused. It's not to be used to do ungodly things. It is to be kept holy. Now, does that mean I have to be sinless? No, because the simple fact of the matter is I will not be sinless. And therein lies the beauty of the once-for-all sacrifice of Jesus. Again, that enjoins us, you know, with this understanding of all the just the myriads and endless sacrifices, just the thousands and tens of thousands of gallons of blood that no doubt flowed from those altars, slaughter after slaughter after slaughter, to handle our problem of sin, was finally resolved with that once-for-all perfect sacrifice of Christ. And so, you know, the priests don't need to be standing in the temple every day making atonement all the time, because Jesus resolved it at the cross. It was finished. You know, when Jesus uttered those words, "It is finished," it was finished. That battle was won. That deal was sealed. End of discussion. You know, he may have just been talking about his life, but when we look at the whole scheme of things, there was far more there that was finished at the cross. Jesus took care of the problem. And that's the whole story of redemption, of how God moved from our problem of sin to his solution of his son on the cross. And then, going on from there, following him, taking up our cross, following him. Be faithful until death. You know, that's what the New Testament is all about, what it means to follow God, what it means to live like Jesus did. Jesus came down here and said, look, I'm going to show you how to fulfill this old law, but I'm going to really show you how to fulfill it, because it's more than just, you know, don't commit adultery. It goes more than that. It's really more than don't murder. It's more than that. And Jesus came down here and, man, I mean, he just laid it out. And said, now, pick up your cross and follow after me. Do as I do. Follow my example. Follow my lead. Be like me, because I'm like the Father. And you and I are all children of the Father. Again, wow. I am a child of God. God looks at me and says, you are my son. Wow. That's big news, folks. That is huge. And that is the whole story of this book we know as the Bible. And so that's the idea we're trying to get out of all this tonight, to understand how everything in the scripture relates to and points to the cross. That's what the whole story is about. There is a billion other things that happen under the hand and at the command of God. But a massive number of those things simply are not recorded because it didn't have anything to do with the cross. And so, you know, everything in this book that we have is all about redeeming mankind, setting that atonement, all about the cross. Also, it's God revealing himself. You know, I've talked about how the Bible is a love letter from God. You know, and if I was going to write a letter to somebody and say, you know, here is everything I want you to know about me. That's what God has done. And so, you know, every now and then we'll take some sidetracks and we'll kind of get off the main discussion to say, look, you know what, let's look at this right here. So let's see how God felt about this. And then, you know, the idea of being able to apply that to our life, to change our lives, to help us get a better grip on what it means to take up that cross and follow him. Because there's a lot more to to picking up that cross and following Jesus than I think we sometimes give it credit for. You know, we sometimes tend to oversimplify that. You know, we've talked about in here that while, yeah, you know, we're free from law and we don't have to do all that stuff that they had to do back then. Yeah, you know, there is a huge freedom there. There is a huge release there. But at the same time, it is equally far more demanding. You know, the Israelite people said, oh, well, I've never killed anybody. Jesus says, yeah, but have you ever hated anyone? How's that anger problem working out for you? You know, it was easy to check the do not murder box. It's a lot harder to check the don't hate box and keep your anger under control box. That's a lot harder. And so, you know, yeah, there's freedom from being free from that law, but there, taking up your cross is a painful, hard, difficult thing. It is not an easy life, but it is a rewarding life. It is a joyous life. You know, with the help of one another here, to me, that's what this is all about here. You know, I come here to learn more about God's word, but man, I also come here to be with my family. It's a family get-together, you know, us to get together, spend time together, recharge our spiritual batteries, because let's face facts, I get beat down out there, you know. The people I work with, they're good people, but sakes alive, you know, the language and the things you hear and this and that, it's just, it beats you up. And so it's nice to be able to come back and get together with my family and just kind of let my hair down, as it were, and you know, just be rejuvenated. And so that's what all this is about. That's what this whole thing of the story of redemption and the kingdom and being a citizen of that kingdom, the church, is all about. And so that's, you know, a lot of what I want us to get out of this whole study in the grand scheme of things. All right, so again, we're in the section of Numbers 15 through all of Deuteronomy, which covers the 40-year wandering. So if you remember so far up to date, the Israelites had left Sinai. They were right there. They were about to cross over and start to take over the land. They sent over the spies. Spies came back, and 10 of them said, we can't do this. And God said, you know what? I am done with you people. And so he says, y'all spied out the land for 40 days. So for every day you spied out the land, you're not going to wander around. And this whole generation, I'm just going to have you all fall dead right here in the wilderness. And this younger generation is going to come in and take over because you people continue to spurn me. You continue to rebel against me. I'm not giving you that land. Y'all have given that up. And so God sends them on this big 40-year wandering. And a lot of things happened during that. And so that's where we are right now. So last week we talked about righteous tattletales. We talked about, you know, a couple weeks ago we talked about the guy who was out picking up sticks on the Sabbath and then, you know, how that he was apprehended by some of his fellow countrymen, fellow Israelites, and hauled up to Moses and Aaron and said, hey, you know, we found this guy doing this. And it turned out to be a situation where they needed to do so. But, you know, like I said, sometimes I like to take off a little trail and say, well, let's talk about this some. And so that led into a discussion last week of righteous tattletaling. And you know what? Sometimes we find brethren in sin, don't we? And sometimes we have to deal with that situation. It's not easy situation. But there's a right way to handle it and there's a wrong way to handle it. And if you handle it the wrong way, it can really mess things up badly. But if you handle it the right way, you might just save a soul. And so we spent some time last week talking about what Jesus said about how you confront a brother in sin and the proper way to handle that. And so that's what we discussed last week. So now, this week we're just carrying on, and admittedly this study tonight isn't going to be anything mind-blowing. We're just going to hit some of the high points and look at some of the things that went on during the 40-year wandering. And what you're going to see is continued rebellion, continued we're better off in Egypt, continued why in the world have you just brought us out here to die? I mean, the people just don't get it. And you know, I try not to be too judgmental on these people because I can be just as stupid sometimes. You know, there's times in my life, I mean, the Lord has this ginormous bucket of blessings that He has poured into my life. But still, so often I find myself discontent and wishing I had that and wishing life was this way and this and that. And I can't help but say, Kirk, you know what? You kind of sound like those Israelites back there. Stop that. And so, but I continue to be amazed at these people. I mean, it's absurd. And so one of the first things that we see here is Korah's rebellion. And so if there's somebody, oh, by the way, more bad news. I don't have any more candy tonight. I meant to refill, but I forgot. So. I'm not sure I can read without candy. I know how it empowers the eyes. I understand. Yeah, I know. But if somebody would like to read, feel free.
I'll probably butcher the names, but I'll read.
Go for it.
Now, Korah, the son of Izhar, and the son of Kohath, the son of Levi, with Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and on the son of Pelet, sons of Reuben, took action. Wow, that was tough. And there
man, it just doesn't seem to end, does it? So I'll read on here. Then Moses sent a summons to Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, but they said, "We will not come up. Is it not enough that you have brought us up out of a land flowing with milk and honey to have us die in the wilderness, but you would also lord it over us? Indeed, you have not brought us into a land flowing with milk and honey, nor have you given us an inheritance of fields and vineyards. Would you put out the eyes of these men? We will not come up." And so, who was Korah and Dathan and Abiram? Well, Korah was a Levite, and therefore is one of the priests of Israel. He was from the tribe of Levite. This was the priestly tribe, and so Korah and his relatives were some of the priests. Dathan and Abiram were from the tribe of Reuben. And so it seems like they just were kind of formed a little partnership here, you know, to talk this out and work this out. We see that they said that, you know, if we go back and look, we see that, let's see, it says that these guys, they took action together with some of the sons of Israel, 250 leaders from the congregation, chosen assembly, men of renown. So we can see that there was, you know, these guys were kind of in cahoots with one another to make this thing happen. And so what was their complaint? What was it that they were mad about? Go ahead.
How come you get to be in charge?
Yeah.
That was their complaint. Who made you boss?
Yeah, who made you boss? Has Moses heard that complaint before since leaving Egypt? Just a time or ten, right? It's just like, you know, you would think at some time this would come to a stop. Because every other time this happened, how well did it end for that individual or people? Not too good. You know, you would think that it would settle in their minds. Yeah, I feel this way. This is bothering me. This is frustrating me. But you know what? I'm just going to keep my mouth shut. But it doesn't seem to settle in too well. Chuck?
Well, I think the whole thing behind Corey's thinking was, I want to be in charge.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
That was, I mean, his complaint was, who made you in charge? But what he really was coming from was, I want to be in charge.
Yeah.
I ought to be in charge.
Yeah. He was a man of renown. He was obviously one of the leaders of the congregation of Israel, the priest. So yeah, hey, I can do the job just as well as you can. Yeah, sure. You know, they were claiming that Moses and Aaron were exalting themselves above the rest of Israel and that they weren't delivering on the promise. Had Moses and Aaron delivered on the promise? Was it Moses and Aaron's promise to begin with? No. Who made the promise? God did. So what are they really, who are they really calling out here? Yeah. Not a very wise move. You know, and so here they are. They're saying, you know what? You told us that we were going to get this land. You hauled us out of Egypt. We've gone through all this stuff. And, you know, if we look right here, it says, all the congregation of holy are holy, every one of them, and the Lord is in their midst. And so, you know, we kind of get the idea that, look, this has gone on long enough. We've done all this stuff. We were hauled out of Egypt. We got the tabernacle built. We've got this priestly system down. It's working well. The people are doing good. What gives? You've gone far enough. Paul?
Korah was a Levite but not a priest.
Oh, he wasn't a priest.
Okay, in fact, if you read verse 10, Moses says to him, you're trying to take over the priesthood too. You are one of the Levites, and they were divided into Levites and priests.
Okay.
Everybody was a tribe of Levites. There were Levites who took care of certain jobs within the temple.
Okay.
And then there was a subset that were priests.
Okay.
He has brought you and all your fellow Levites near to himself, but now you're trying to get hold of the priesthood too.
Yeah, do you think he could be that he's accusing him of trying to take over leadership of the priesthood? Because there's another verse in there where he says, you know, what has Aaron done to you that you're trying to do this? Yeah.
I just wanted to make that clarification that not all the Levites were priests.
Okay. Sure. Yeah. You're right.
I'm sorry?
Yeah. Yeah. Very true. All right. So, you know, they're fed up with this. You know, they're saying, hey, we're supposed to have this land, but here we are. Well, my stars, why? You know, when is it going to settle in their minds that we're the problem? You know, we have all messed up. We are doing this wandering because we all continue to spurn the Lord. It just doesn't seem to register.
No, because they said they were holy. Everyone is holy.
Yeah. It just doesn't seem to register with them that we all are the problem. So, yeah. So Moses comes up with a plan to resolve the situation. You know, we see Moses get pretty ill about it. Again, I'm just going to kind of skip over a lot of this stuff just for time's sake. But, you know, Moses comes up with a plan. And so he says, look, here's what we're going to do. Korah, you and all your people, Aaron, y'all get fire pans and with your incense and all this. You meet at the tent of meeting, and God's going to show which priest was his choice as the leader of Israel. And so God replies in Numbers 16, 20 through 24. He says, then the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, separate yourselves from among this congregation that I may consume them instantly. How many times have we heard that one? You know, it's like the What, the third to fifth time we've heard God tell Moses, look, just get out of the way. I'm wiping these people out. I will start over with you. This is several times the Lord has just had been reached the point of absolute exasperation and says, I'm done. I'm going to wipe you all out. I will start over again. Moses, you're going to be my next Abraham. Abraham part two. You know, this is like the third to fifth time that I can recall seeing the Lord say this since they had left Egypt. And so Moses and Aaron fell on their faces. And, you know, that's another one that we continue to see a lot. Moses fell on his face. You know, I bet you that guy's face was black and blue by the time he passed on. Or his nose was nice and flat, one. You know, of course, I'm being facetious. But there's time and time and time again, something happens and Moses falls on his face like, oh, dear me, y'all are going to get it. You know. And so, but Moses and Aaron, they fell on their faces and said, oh, God. God of the spirits of all flesh, when one man sins, will you be angry with the entire congregation? Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the congregation, saying, get back from around the dwellings of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. Number 16, 31 through 35, as he finished speaking all these words, the ground that was under them split open, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed them up, and their households and all the men who belonged to Korah with their possessions, so they and all that belonged to them went down alive into Sheol, and the earth closed up over them, and they perished from the midst of the assembly. All Israel who were around them fled at their outcry, for they said, the earth may swallow us up too. And so everybody ran. Fire also came forth from the Lord and consumed the 250 men who were offering the incense. Wow. You know, so Moses had told them, Aaron, you get your fire pan, Korah, you get 200, you know, all you 250, y'all take your fire pans, meet at the front of the tent. God will show who he chooses. And so fire comes out from the midst of the tent, just like it did with, you know, Nadab and Abihu, consumed them all right there. The ones who were out and about, the family, livestock, tents, you name it, the ground opened up, they all fall in, and the ground closes back up on them. It's brutal. Okay, but the Lord again lets it be known, look, do not come in here treating me unholy like this. Not going to happen. And time again, the Lord has made this clear. Time and time again, the Lord has said, Moses and Aaron they're my guys. That's who I have chosen. And until I say otherwise, that's the way it's going to be. So any grumbling and griping and complaining about that will be handled thus. And so this is another situation where we see that going on. All right, after this event occurs, you know, so there were 250 men who were consumed by fire right there in the front of the tent of meeting. They all had their fire pans, which I don't necessarily know what these things look like, but they're obviously some kind of metal pans that could, you know, carry the stuff that they burned as part of the priestly duties. And so these fire pans, they were collected from the remains, and they were then hammered into metal sheeting for the altar. If you remember, the altar was outside of the tent of meeting, okay? So you had the tabernacle that had the walls around it, and then inside of that was the tent, and then out in the courtyard area there was the altar. And that's where the people of Israel were to bring their animals and stuff to be sacrificed, and the priest would sacrifice them there on the altar. And so they took all these fire pans and they melted them together and hammered them into metal sheeting that went on the altar. And it was to serve as a reminder to Israel to not become like Korah and his company. And so, let's see, it was to become a reminder to Israel that no one who is not a descendant of Aaron should come near to burn incense before the Lord so that he will not become like Korah and his company. And so, you know, it was supposed to be one of these things to serve as a reminder to say, look here, keep your place. I am God. I will say how this goes. You challenge that, we're going to have problems. And so God uses this as a physical and visual reminder to them every time they would come to sacrifice to mind their place. The very next day, anybody ever heard that song, Little Bunny Foo Foo? Anybody? Little bunny foo-foo hopping through the forest. The very next day, you know, it's the story, our little kid song a little kid song we used to sing when at Bible camp and stuff when I was growing up, and it was a story about this bunny who would scoop up field mice and smash them on the head, and down came the good fairy and said, "Stop doing that or I'm going to handle you." The very next day, little bunny Fufu's back at it. And of course, after about 3 days of this, well, the good fairy comes down and handles bunny Fufu. Anyhow, so that's the song I thought of when I read this passage. But on the next day, the very next day, after all this happens, after 250 people are consumed by fire, after the ground opens up, swallows a bunch of people, a bunch of animals, a bunch of tents, and closes up on it, the very next day, the congregation of the sons of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron and saying, "It's like, my stars, people. You've got to be kidding me. Y'all just saw what happened yesterday. Do you really want that to happen to you? Again, just keep your mouth closed and all will be well." You know, I tell that to my children all the time. Some of them will get to arguing with their mom, you know, arguing over school stuff, something like that. And they'll just be arguing back and forth. And I'll finally walk over and say, "Listen to me. Just say yes, ma'am, and shut your mouth. And all will be well for you. Regardless of how long this argument goes on, you will lose because she is mom, you are child. The best thing you do is just close your mouth other than to say, yes, ma'am. And all will go well." That's kind of the story you would think these people would get. That, you know what, I'm just going to keep my mouth shut. Even though I may not like the way things are going, I'm just going to keep my mouth shut and deal with it. The very next day. So it came about, however, so they came and they grumbled against Moses and Aaron, saying, "You are the ones who have caused the death of the Lord's people." You know, isn't that always the fun accusations? You know, when somebody else messes up and then they get in trouble, "Well, it's your fault." Really? I'm pretty sure you're the one that did it. So, "You're the ones that have caused the death of the Lord's people. It came about, however, when the congregation had assembled against Moses and Aaron, that they turned toward the tent of meeting. Behold, the cloud covered it, and the glory of the Lord appeared. Then Moses and Aaron came to the front of the tent of meeting, and the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, 'Get away from among this congregation, that I may consume them instantly.'" And again, they fell on their faces. All right, so this event kicked off the little plague. Some form of a plague just started spreading through the congregation, and people immediately started falling dead and getting incredibly sick. It doesn't really go into detail of what the plague was. It just said that a plague started spreading throughout the congregation and throughout the camp. So Moses instructed Aaron to run quickly, get some incense and fire on a fire pan, and go run through the midst of the congregation to stop this thing. And so Aaron does so. And so Aaron goes and gets it, and he runs in through the midst of the congregation. And in doing so, he's making a feeble attempt to make some form of atonement for the people to God to stop this thing. And so he eventually reaches a point where it says that Aaron was basically taking a stand between the living and the dead. And so, you know, you can kind of see this whole congregation assembled there at the front of the tabernacle, and just like domino effect, you know, they just kind of start falling dead. Aaron's running through them, and Aaron finally reaches a point with his fire pan where he's standing between a bunch of dead and the living, and it says that the plague stopped there. And so Aaron stood between them, and he made atonement. But from that, 14,700 people die just from this census. That doesn't include, the Bible says that that does not include the people that died from the rebellious event that took place the day before. That's a lot of dead people, folks. Could you imagine? Just all right there. And so, but this is the reality of the situation of what was going on. But again, you know, you would think that it would stop there. You think that it would stop a long time ago. But it just keeps it going, and it keeps it going, and it keeps it going. It's like, people, get it through your heads. This is what's going to happen to you if you don't consider your thoughts on the way things are going here. And so 14,700 people die. All right, Numbers 19, we see this ordinance of the red heifer. This red heifer is just supposed to be an unblemished red heifer, slaughtered and burned along with cedar wood, hyssop, and scarlet material. And so the ashes of this stuff, you know, of this bull, The cedar wood, the hyssop, and the scarlet material, it was all to be collected and put into a pot outside the camp and mixed with water and all this to be used for spiritual and ritual cleansing. Remember, you know, there was a lot of things that the Israelite people could do to make themselves unclean. And to get clean, they would usually have to go outside the camp for several days and go through various washings and rituals and da-da-da-da before they could then come back into the camp. And so this ordinance of the red heifer was a part of that. Found an interesting article on Apologetics Press written by a buddy of mine, Kyle Butt. He suggested that, you know what, this may have been an Israeli version of what we refer to as lava soap today. You guys know what lava soap is? That really abrasive soap that we have out there. Take it for what you will. You know, Kyle just threw this out as a suggestion thing. He's certainly not saying this is precisely why God did it. But what he's doing is saying, you know, there's a lot of wisdom and what we see in this, the ingredients of this thing. And so what we look at is back in the pioneer days, lye was a common thing that soap was made from. And, you know, the pioneers would figure out how to make soap out of various materials. Well, apparently one of the ways you can obtain lye is by taking the ashes of something, running water through it, and it separates the lye out from everything else. Again, I'm no pioneer. I haven't gotten that deep into my backwoods stuff. Yes, I'm from Alabama, but hey, you know, we're not that crazy. You've made a lot of soap? Yeah. All right, did you use lye as part of it? All right. So apparently, though, you can obtain lye through the use of ashes and a series of running water through it and all this kind of stuff just to obtain lye. Apparently, hyssop oil makes for a good antiseptic. Again, I'm no big home remedies type person, but Doug?
The Romans use hyssop
for toilet paper.
For toilet paper?
Okay. Yeah, they said it can be used as an antiseptic or antiviral agent. And apparently cedar oil has some benefits as well for the skin and stuff. Again, I know there's a lot of people who are big into the oils these days. I can tell you that frankincense oil works wonders for molluscum wart. So if any of your children or grandchildren ever obtain those doggone things like mine did, they're little beady white dots that come up on the skin. And if you go to a dermatologist and ask them, they'll say, well, the only way you can get rid of them is to lance them with a really sharp tool here and dig them out. Or else we can get this stuff from a beetle out of South America, but it burns the skin and it'll leave a red rash. Frankincense oil wiped it out. It works great. So take that for what you will. But anyhow, supposedly cedar oil can be useful for various skin issues. And then Kyle suggested that the fibers from the scarlet can be used as just a grit, as it were, you know, like a rubbing agent. What did I say? You know, like a grit. You ever use that goop, or not goop, but... Oh, you know that soap, you might use it in a factory or in a mechanic's workshop. It's got the grit stuff in it, you know, that you can use just to kind of a... Yeah, like Simply Orange, yeah. You know, it has like a scrubbing grit to it, you know, to help cleanse and stuff. So, but Kyle suggested, you know, this sounds like a good ingredients here for a good lava soap. And so these ashes were, all this stuff was to be burnt, and it's supposed to be put into a pot outside the camp and used for part of their ritual cleansing stuff. So, I don't know, I found that article kind of interesting and figured I'd share it here with you guys. So that was the ordinance of the red heifer. Numbers 20, a really sad chapter. Very, very, very sad chapter. It starts off verse 1. We're not told anything more except that Moses and Aaron's sister Miriam died in the wilderness of Zin and was buried there. That's all we're told. I assume maybe it was old age. I don't know. We're really not told. We're just told that she died and they buried her there in the wilderness of Zin. Verses 2 through 7, the people complain yet again due to a lack of water. And, you know, this is one of those where I can kind of understand. The building I'm working in right now is an old building. And it has been strongly suggested to me that I do not drink the water. should not drink the water due to various contents of lead in these very, very, very old pipes. And so the company that kind of runs everything there, they bring in boxes of bottled water for us and things like that, and, you know, the big cooler things, because supposedly the water there just isn't very good for us to drink. And so, well, the bottles of water have all gone, and they haven't restocked them. And so I find myself going, oh dear, I'm thirsty. What am I going to drink? And so, you know, we all have been in a situation at some point where I need some water. I'm really thirsty. But when it's not there, well, we kind of get a little whiny and complainy, don't we? Oh, I'm so thirsty. I get this. So the people are running low on water, and so they start to whine and complain about it. But, you know, what always seems to break the camel's proverbial back is when they start saying, man, I wish we were back in Egypt. Oh, so much better there. We had water, all the water we wanted, all the food we wanted. We're so much better off. And that always just sets God off. And so here we go again. You know, the Lord gets ill. But, and again, they accuse Moses and therefore God of bringing him out in the wilderness to die, blah, blah, blah. So Moses and Aaron again, poof, fall on their face before the doorway of the tent of meeting, and the glory of the Lord appeared. Verses 8 through 13, Moses disobeyed God. So God comes in and he's pretty ill with the people, and he says, all right, look, I want you to go out and I want you to speak to the rock. Speak to the rock and water will come forth for the people. Well, Moses instead struck the rock with his rod. He came out there and whacked the thing twice, and water came out. But Moses' disobedience in hitting the rock rather than speaking to the rock caused him to be barred from entrance to Canaan. Wow. What are your thoughts on that? Paul?
According to the scriptures, what Moses did was he broke the faith. Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, we kind of see Moses maybe getting out of control here, right?
He decided that he and God were going to take care of this.
Yeah.
That's why he said, I'm going to speak to the rebels. And he said, unless we
take
water from this rock.
Yeah. Do you blame Moses much? I think I would probably be an extremely bald man by this time of my life if I were Moses, because I would have pulled all my hair out by now. You know, out of all these times, I have to fall on my face. Do what? Yeah, it absolutely is. And even for this tremendous man of God, right? You know, I've said it in here before. When we flip through the pages of scriptures outside of Jesus Christ, Moses is probably the greatest man that we read about in scriptures. I mean, the task that he did and how he handled that task, the righteousness that he lived out through all of this. I mean, I can't think of another character. Like Elijah may come close. You know, Elijah was a great man. Elisha was a great man. But, you know, Nehemiah was a great man. But in my opinion, none of those guys had to put up with half of what Moses did. And so, you know, like I said, outside of Jesus Christ, Moses is just one of the most amazing characters in the scriptures to me. So this great man of God who's gone through all of this is barred entrance. And it's like Paul said, because his faith is finally broke. They got the best of him and he let it go. We read about it more in Psalms 106. Psalms 106 is a song that David wrote, and it's all about the history of Israel. It's a really good psalm. I want to read through it at some point in this study because it summarizes everything quite well, much better than I can. You know, it takes me weeks, of course, if not months. Well, David kind of did it in a handful of verses, so yeah. But Psalms 106 is all about Israel's rebellion against God. And in verses 32 through 33 of that chapter of that song, we see what happened to Moses. It says, they also provoked God to wrath at the waters of Meribah, so that it went hard with Moses on their account, because they were rebellious against his spirit, and he spoke rashly with his lips. And so we kind of see Moses just lose it here. And instead of just coming out there and doing what God wants, oh, you stupid Israelites, wham, wham, you know, and God said, And so due to that, Moses was not allowed to go into the land of Canaan. All right, so we see from this, in his anger, he went beyond what God had said, and it was displeasing to the Lord. And so Moses allowed his anger there to get out of check, and it overrode his heart and his faith and what he knew he should be doing. Were you saying something else, Paul? Yes.
Both of them were wonderful people, but Moses was a faithful servant, Jesus was a faithful son.
Mm.
And that's where the distinction was.
Yeah, Moses a faithful servant, Jesus the faithful son. Yeah, I like that. And it says in Hebrews 3. All right, very good. Thank you. All right, so very quickly, continue reading on. Numbers 20, again, continues just to be a very sad chapter. So then the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron at Mount Hor by the border of the land of Edom, saying, Aaron will be gathered to his people, for he shall not enter the land which I have given to the sons of Israel, because you rebelled against my command at the waters of Meribah. So it seems that Aaron kind of took part in this as well. Take Aaron and his son Eleazar and bring them up to Mount Hor, and strip Aaron of his garments and put them on his son Eleazar. So Aaron will be gathered to his people and will die there. So Moses did just as the Lord had commanded, and they went up to Mount Hor in the sight of all the congregation. After Moses had stripped Aaron of his garments and put them on his son Eleazar, Aaron died there on the mountaintop. Then Moses and Eleazar came down from the mountain. When all the congregation saw that Aaron had died, all the house of Israel wept for Aaron for 30 days. Man, could you imagine? I've always wondered if there was somebody who could look into the future and say, Kirk, here's exactly when and how you're going to die. I don't know if I'd want to know it. There's a part on me that says, yeah, I'd like to know just so I can go ahead and prepare for it. But there's another part on me that just says, you know what? I just wouldn't want to know that, because it would just, that's all I'd be thinking about. I've got this many days left. I don't think I'd want to know. And so here, though, Aaron is told, hey, you're about to die. And so what you guys are going to do is you're going to go up on this mountain. It's going to be like a changing of the guard, as it were. We're going to take the priestly stuff off Aaron. It's now going to be put upon Eleazar. And Aaron, you're going to go to be with your fathers. That would not be a very fun walk up that mountain, would it? But nonetheless, we see it happen. And as soon as the garments are removed and changed, Aaron dies there on the mountain. And so we see then that Israel wept for Aaron for 30 days. 21:1-5, let's see. We'll pick up there next week. Again, like I said, nothing mind-blowing tonight. Just kind of moving through the wilderness, wandering, and some of the major events that happened during it. So we'll pick up there next week with the bronze serpent. That's pretty cool. All right, guys, y'all have a good rest of the week. And we're going to be talking about a talking donkey here soon, too. Y'all have a good rest of the week.